Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast. This week, Ken Loach delivers Sorry We Missed You and joins us on the show to give us his dispatch on its production. Plus, with Dr. Sleep, we return to the Overlook Hotel in search of a shining example of a horror sequel. I'm Jake Cunningham, and joining me for the winter months as custodian to this fine podcast booth, I've welcomed the guests Kelly Powell.
Hello.
Ella Kemp.
Hi.
And emerging from room 237, Sam Howlett.
A nice soak in the bath.
Yes. Oh, you're looking rejuvenated. Your
Thank
skin.
You.
Wonderful.
It's falling off my bones.
Yes. Well, that's what a good moisturiser will do for you. All right. So a couple of interesting films to talk about this week. We will start with Dr. Sleep and a long-awaited sequel to The Shining, both the book and the film.
Mm-hmm.
Sam, you've been lucky enough to see this one.
Sure.
What is this one about?
So for those of us wondering what happens to young Danny Torrance after the events of The Shining, your question has now been answered. So 30 or 40 years after the events of The Shining, Danny has grown up into Ewan McGregor. Lucky him. And he is now still trying to get over the events of what happened at the Overlook Hotel and also struggling with alcoholism. And he's trying to use his shining powers for good, working in a hospice, sort of easing the elderly towards death. Meanwhile, a cult has emerged called the True Knot, who also have the shining, and they use their power to find other people with the shining, but kind of drain the life out of them to rejuvenate them. And they travel around the country doing this. They are headed up by Rebecca Ferguson, who plays the villain of the film called Rose the Hat. Also happening is another young girl who has the shining, but she has this sort of the most powerful level of the shining, and she is wanted by this cult and reaches out to Danny for help.
Okay. It took me a while as you were explaining that, because I'd forgotten that the shining is like the psychological power.
That is,
and imagining like a VHS copy of The Shining and then a DVD copy. And then you're like, she's got the superpower version. So she's got like a Blu-ray copy of The Shining.
Why this is kind of interesting as like a sequel to the film and to the book is that the Stephen King book, The Shining, is way more concerned with the fact that Danny has like telepathic powers. And that's why it's called The Shining, because that's what the chef in the hotel calls it, The Shining, that people that shine have this power. Whereas the Kubrick film is way more concerned with the fact that Jack Nicholson is going mad. And this film is very much... So there is a book, Dr. Sleep, that Stephen King wrote about 10 years ago as a sequel to his book, The Shining. And this film is an adaptation of that book, but changes have been made to the book in order for it to fit more in with the Kubrick film. So it's a real kind of meeting of the two. And I think the director, Mike Flanagan, has done a really good job at that.
Yeah, let's do a quick recap on Mike Flanagan. I really like him as a director. I think Gerald's Game is humongous fun.
Yeah.
Really good little gory, tight horror. The Haunting of Hill House, which is this 10-part Netflix series, is a fantastic ghost story. But he, throughout all his films, he just has this issue, or he doesn't quite know how to stick the landing, which is a very Stephen King thing to do. So in a way, he's perfect for this.
Well, he's pretty much exclusively made horror films. So he broke out with Oculus, which, if you haven't seen, is a really good little horror film starring Karen Gillan. So he did that. He did a film called Hush, which is on Netflix. He did Gerald's Game. He did, as you say, The Haunting of Hill House.
Ouija 2?
Yeah, so even... So throughout all of these things, these films are scary, but he's way more concerned with telling a good story and having really interesting characters than he is making a scary film. And that doesn't sacrifice the scares, because these things are scary. Like, if anyone who's seen Hill House, that is terrifying. But it's way more focused on who are these characters, what is the past of these characters. All these films are obsessed with past. They all pretty much have flashbacks. And Dr. Sleep fits really well in with that, where it's a scary film, but at the heart of it is a character who's going through post-traumatic stress disorder. He's going through struggling with his alcoholism and sort of reconciling with his past to save the life of a girl. And I think he is the perfect fit for this job.
So as you and I are members of the Flan Base, we were very happy to see him announced as the director of this. But it's not like Mike Flanagan is a household name at all. Like, he's in like a horror director for hire, but just really solid. And so no one's coming to Dr. Sleep to think, I've got to see that new Mike Flanagan film.
Yeah.
They're coming to it for a Shining sequel.
Shining sequel.
Kelly, you are not as big on Flanagan as Sam and I. You're coming to this one straight as a King fan, Kubrick fan, Shining fan.
Yeah.
And how does it work for you coming at it from that way?
Yeah, I didn't know anything about him. And obviously I've heard about how good The Haunting of Hill House is. But I'm not a horror person, so it's not my genre. Although I really do love The Shining. Haven't seen it in many years. And so I came at this completely, like, I didn't rewatch The Shining. I kind of just was like, I'm really interested to see where the story is going to go. I hadn't read the books either, so I really didn't know. And I really enjoyed this film. I feel like it's a really good stand, like it holds its own, but obviously tips its hat to Kubrick in many ways. Yet it doesn't go too much down the nostalgia hole. It shows you where it's come from, but it's definitely its own movie. I think it has a very different tone and pace to the Kubrick film. And it's obviously, yes, dealing with different characters, and it's a solid little story.
Stephen King famously does not like the adaptation of The Shining.
I think he has warmed to it in recent years, but...
Because I'm sure it's helped him out
I mean,
for a few decades.
I've read the original book and obviously seen the film The Shining, and they're really different. I think they're very different in terms of their stories, but also different in terms of the tone, I think. That film is almost, has got a warmth, the book has a warmth to it that the film does not have of The Shining. That's actually quite a cold film when you think about The Shining, and even the fact that...
It's quite cold,
Yeah, because it's winter. But spoiler, Danny and his mum survive The Shining, but even that in the film doesn't really feel like a victory for them. It feels like it's, when they escape, it's a very kind of cold escape, if you know what I mean. It's very unemotional, whereas this film...
It's winter.
Because it's winter. This film has more of the warmth, I think. Mike Flanagan really loves Danny as a character, and that's something that's, again, like I said, it's gone with him from all his films. He wants you to really love these characters, and like in Hill House, you really fall in love with the family, and when horrible things are happening to them, it's not just fun, it's actually quite horrible and affecting to the viewer, that you're watching these people that you've come to really like, that when these bad things are happening to them, it makes it even worse. And Dr. Sleep has this thing as well, where the horror isn't just fun. The scares aren't fun. It's actually Mike Flanagan's treating them like real people. And that's where I think he's sort of crossing the bridge between the King book and the Kubrick film. And so when the film, this is in the trailer and everything, revisits the Overlook Hotel, there are a lot of Shining references. And I think some people might roll their eyes at some of the bits. Like, there is a bit where Ewan McGregor looks through the cracking the door and recreates the Here's Johnny shot.
That's the poster as well.
That's the poster as well,
yeah.
Thing. So there's stuff like that, and I found that really fun, actually. Like, I think it was really kind of exhilarating when the theme to The Shining kicks in towards the end of the film.
Great.
And it recreates some of the shots, and he's walking around that famous carpet, and he walks past room 237, and we know something's bad in there. And all that stuff, and he goes into the ballroom, and you hear that. Da, 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 da. And I just felt really like I'm really, really, really enjoying this. And even though you've had this entirely different story up until now, suddenly that gives it a lot of energy. And I walked out with quite a big smile on my face.
So more like keeping you, Doctor, awake.
Exactly.
And I'm really excited to watch this film. I'm super up for it. It's out on Halloween.
Yeah, perfect. This is the Halloween film of this year.
Okay, so that is Doctor Sleep, which is out in cinemas. So do go and check that one out if you can. Definitely one if you're fans of those Mike Flanagan vehicles we mentioned. But obviously, if you want to carry on that Shining story, then do head out to that one as well. But we must move on and talk to Ken Loach about his new film, Sorry We Missed You, which sees him once again team up with I, Daniel Blake screenwriter Paul Laverty for another indictment of the capitalist forces shaping modern Britain. This one is about Ricky, who's dreaming of better things for his family when he becomes a delivery van driver. But he is an independent contractor, as he's told. So he's working in unsparing conditions, just like his wife, Abby, who's a care nurse, both of them on 0-hour contracts. And so they're living like this, and they're within their means, they're pushed to the brink, and their world gradually falls apart when their teenage son starts to go off the rails. So this is a new collaboration between Paul Laverty and Ken Loach. They'd recently done I, Daniel Blake, and they'd certainly they're tackling a subject that people may feel like is similar to that film, and they'll certainly draw parallels between them. But this is something new. This is a subject that maybe people don't know a lot about, and I think it's great to see Ken Loach delving into it. Ella, you'd had a bit of time to mull this one over now. What were your initial thoughts to Sorry We Missed You?
So I quite liked I, Daniel Blake. I wasn't that familiar with Ken Loach before, and I found it incredibly affecting, very upsetting and illuminating and all those things. And I've had a similar reaction to Sorry We Missed You. I didn't know much about the subject matter at all. And yeah, I think it's a really interesting and important area of Britain to shine a light on, but also the idea of the 0-hour contract and the gig economy, that's like everywhere, and so many people are, you know, freelance and just on their own and having to fight, and you know, when the world falls apart, but it actually doesn't, so yours does, but everything else has to keep running. And I think it's a really difficult task to capture that, how everything is still running and everything is just very calm and normal, even though for this microcosm of people, just like the worst possible things have happened. And there's a balance here that I haven't seen many other directors ever try, attempt or succeed to pull off, really. So yeah, it really got me.
And Sam, you were lucky enough to talk to Ken about this one.
I did, yeah. Really nice to sit down with Ken, who's one of the, you know, most influential and most famous British directors of all time. We spoke about his relationship with Paul Laverty. We spoke about his desire to tell this film and return to filmmaking after he retired a few years ago, and just about the world of filmmaking in general.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
We're delighted to welcome Ken Loach to the Curzon podcast. Hello.
Hello.
Thanks
Hello.
For joining us. So I interviewed Paul Laverty a few years ago, the writer of the film, and he spoke about being a lawyer and how his screenplays are very much like an argument for him. Can you talk to us about what the argument you and Paul are making with Sorry We Missed You?
I'd say it's more of an exploration than an argument.
Okay.
an exploration of a family and the circumstances they live in, and the choices they have, and the choices they have are determined by the work mum and dad do, and dad's a so-called self-employed van driver.
Yeah.
Delivering what you've earned, you've ordered online, and mum's a care worker who might come and look after your granny or your mum, dad, and when they're living on their own. And both their jobs are precarious. They need both incomes to survive, and they work long hours, maybe 12 hours a day, and they've got no guaranteed income. Mum's on 0 hours. Dad's supposed to be an entrepreneur, but actually he's just a plain driver.
Yeah.
And they're not there for the kids. And the pressure and the stress comes into the family, centres in the family. And that's the problem. So the teenage lad, is getting in trouble with the police. Mm-hmm. The little girl becomes a peacemaker. Mm. But the whole family gets fractured. Mm. But it's a good family, you know. It's a good family. So it's the story of them. It's a story, really, of that family.
And I think this works quite well as a companion piece to I, Daniel Blake. Can you talk about how this kind of sprung off from the back of that film?
When we were doing Daniel Blake, we went to food banks. In the food banks, there were many working poor. People in jobs where they couldn't support themselves, because the wages were so low. We thought, that's extraordinary. People working and they still can't afford to feed their family. What's going on? And so that led us into the whole issue of precarious work. We felt that this family could live around the corner from Daniel Blake and Katie in that film. There could be neighbours. And Newcastle's a... We thought we would, in a way, link them stylistically at the beginning and in the kind of scale of the film and the intimacy of the film, I hope. But it's two sides of the same society.
So you came back from an announced retirement to do Daniel Blake. Did you think that when you came back with Daniel Blake that that would then be your last film? Or was there a real sort of renewed energy for you, a real renewed desire to keep telling these stories?
Well, the desire to tell the stories never goes away. It's just when you're knocking on a bit, you've got to be careful what you plan.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, we managed to get through this one, so I don't know. We'll have to see.
Okay. I find the relationship you have with Paul Laverty really interesting, and it's something that's really sort of dominated the second half of your career. Can you talk about that relationship and how that working relationship works between you and Paul?
Well, we're good friends, first of all, share the same view of the world, and the same things make us laugh, same things make us angry, so it's been a real joy for me, really. I guess I'd have packed up a lot earlier if you'd, you know, without this working relationship. So it's... This film's emerged from an ongoing conversation about what's important and what we find interesting and what are the stories that actually have to be told. And then Paul will sketch a character or two and we talk about that, and then he'll do a first draft and we knock it backwards and forwards and so on, really. But he comes to as much of the shooting as he can.
Right.
He's there for the end, you know, the key casting thing. So we kind of share the process.
Okay. And in terms of casting, then you've stuck with very much sort of unknown actors for the film. Can you talk about that casting process and what you're kind of looking for in each of these performers?
Well, next to the script, the bringing people to finding people who will bring it to life is the most important decision.
Mm.
And in our case, we want somebody who you will believe is a van driver.
Yeah.
And somebody who you will believe is a care worker. And kids who are really from that part, that place. So there's a real test for finding people who are authentic. We see lots of people. We see see actors, and people have done some acting, and maybe people haven't done much at all. And out of that, you find the very best person.
Okay.
People.
So I'm interested in that your films are really, you know, well known for having a sort of social conscious heart, and that's something that's stayed with you throughout your career. What are the films and filmmakers that are working today that you kind of feel share this view of you, that you should use cinema to kind of tell these kind of stories and have this kind of political message to their filmmaking?
I guess we always slightly recoil from calling them with a political message, because that sounds ultimately boring. I mean, they've got to be stories about people. The people have got to engage you. You know, it's got to be something you recognise and not feel got at. I mean, it should just be a story. You enjoy being hearing and seeing. And I think that it's difficult to pick out one or two names, because then I'll forget other good people. The problem is that, and I think there are more who would like to make films connected to the way the world is than are doing it. I mean, and we all work in different ways. I mean, Mike Lee obviously is an old friend and works in a very different way, but is interested in the same kind of area. There's a very good Chilean director called Patricio Guzman who did brilliant films about his country. God, my mind always goes blank, and I think that if I got a better short-term memory, I'd be reeling off half a dozen names. But so it's difficult. But and of course, everyone is different. And but I think the problem is that people who decide who make what films are made are not the filmmakers. Mm. It's the investors. It's the studio heads. It's the distributors. So. There are more filmmakers who'd like to work in a, you know, telling contemporary stories based on real life than actually are made.
Okay. I think there's probably a perception out there that the more films you make, the easier it is to make the films you want to make. Is that something you found in your career? Like, is it easier for you to get these kind of films off the ground these days, or do you still find that there's a bit of pushback against telling these kinds of stories?
Well, we've been lucky, because I think we've got a little niche now, you know, where... And so long as the films have to, they have to get their money back, and and make a little bit of something for the people who've invested in them. Yeah. So we couldn't continue if the films kept losing money. Mm. And they're not expensive films to make. A lot of what money that is spent on films, I think, is silly. It's just wasted. I mean, you know, lines of caravans and lines of portaloos and, you know, all that sort of silly indulgence is actually destructive. So we work very simply. Mm-hmm. But everyone's on proper union contracts. But it's inexpensive filmmaking. It helps, you know, because then you don't have to recoup so much.
Yeah. And what sort of state do you think the British film industry is in at the moment?
I can never judge the British film industry. I mean, I feel on the edge of it always,
right.
And always have been. And you know, it carries on. It looks across the Atlantic. I wish it would look across the Channel. I think American filmmaking is here because they want to work with the technicians, but they occupy our space, and we need to tell our own stories. You know, not just be hacks for. Sorry, I shouldn't say hacks, but not just skilled workers for American ideas and American profit.
Mm.
So I wish our film industry were more independent. I wish it wasn't so colonized by the Americans, and I wish it would look across to Europe.
Okay, great. Ken Loach, thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Cheers.
Pleasure.
Okay, so sorry we missed you. As I mentioned just on the synopsis before we left there, is about Ricky and his family, and Ricky's just taken this job working jarringly for a company called PDF, which I couldn't stop thinking about.
How have I not realised that?
Yeah.
6 months.
I know. But they're like a DPD parcel force type company. So he gets this job there. It's initially everything's bright and sunny, but we as an audience member can kind of see him digging a hole that he's not aware of, that he's just saying yes to stuff because he needs the job and he's enthusiastic about it. So he's selling the family car so he can buy a van that he can do these deliveries in. But that's his own van, it's not a company van.
Well, he's also kind of pitched it by the boss, isn't he? He's kind of pitched that you are not working for me, you are working for yourself. This is a investment. This is, you are technically, you are an entrepreneur. You're working for yourself. You do your own hours, you do your own thing. And this is obviously, sounds really great for someone who's been grafting for so many years.
Mm. But he's, yeah, he's not. He is just working for someone.
Yeah.
But
without
the benefits.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is no contract for him. He has to pay for everything. There's no expenses or anything like that. Anything goes wrong, he's got to fork out the bill for it. So this is perhaps something that we encounter almost on a daily basis when we go and send something in the post or do some online shopping, receive something at the door. We might sign a little electronic pad. That thing is valued at £1,000 and is something that, again, goes into his ownership. That breaks, he's got to buy it. And so we have this opening kind of 15 minutes setting us up of the rules of the game here. Mm-hmm. And ultimately we know that this will fall apart. But it does so in quite a horrible fashion. And I think the film does really well to introduce us to a world that I think a lot of audience members are going to feel like they're familiar with, like they know about this stuff, but giving you exactly the details, those minute details about the costs of things, about how the contracts work, about it making you really feel like a member of the working team in this environment, so that when things do crumble, you feel it on a very personal level, because it's been very well crafted as to how this machine has been built to ruin this man.
Yeah, and it also shows you how there's no empathy, or there's no like human to human relation. Like, some obviously lots of stuff happens to the family, but at one point, you know, Ricky sits down with Maloney, the boss, who's this hard ass, you know, what does he call himself?
The patron saint of nasty bastards.
Yeah, that's what he calls himself. And he's just like, you know, he begs him basically for some time off to deal with what's happening at home, and the response is like this long monologue that Maloney sort of spews, and the bottom line is that, like, yeah, he doesn't care, and if he can't work, he's got to find someone to replace him.
Yeah, like, this is the mad thing, that you're sold this idea of you're a freelancer, you're an entrepreneur, which in a way you would feel like, right, so that means that I am in control of my time as well. So if I needed to take a week because my son, in this example, has been bad at school and has been told that he has to stay at home for a week, so I need that time off. But not only can I not take that time off, every day that I do take that off, I owe this person money as well. And it's astonishing. Like, it seems like cartoonishly evil.
Yeah.
And it is just shocking, the fact that it is real, and the fact, when you think about it, how many people out there are doing this job, and how many people will have experienced exactly this. Because this is not a crazy thing. Like, Paul Laverty has been out there and has done the research.
Yeah.
As he did with I, Daniel Blake, these are all based on real experiences. And it is just shocking.
Yeah, it's just so indicative of the system that just doesn't care about people. People are expendable in this capitalist world we live in, and it's really sad.
Mm. And we've kind of focused on Ricky there, but we should mention other members of his family, particularly Abby, who's played by Debbie Honeywood. And so she's a care nurse, and she is on another similar non-existent contract of having to do this work. And not only that, because of the exploitation of Ricky, she's lost her car as well. And so, like, both of them are just heading down this route that is not going to end well, whilst the kids are going off the rails too.
I think the fact that both both Ricky and Abby are in this similar situation across different professions makes it so much more believable and impactful, the way that this is such a universal and unfair thing that affects everyone, and yet they both have to deal with very, very similar injustices to raise this family, where just you'd think it would be easier when your partner's going through the same thing, but they're both pushed into their own corners. And yeah, there's this very interesting balance between the way that Ken Loach and Paul Laverty direct with this sense of compassion and great care, but to highlight how selfish and cruel and like isolating all of these situations are. And I think having that through a family where every one of the members is affected does achieve something different to what I, Daniel Blake, did, because in that film I felt a lot more like it's this woman, she's on her own, and you know, all these things are happening. And I think I felt like it was much more about each individual person just completely on their own. But here there's a very interesting dynamic and balance between everyone fighting the same things but dealing with different little
things. Yeah, you see those waves of interaction and how the events will kind of have a domino effect on every member of this family. But it's well worth seeking out. I think there's some really good performances in there. Chris, as with other Ken Loach films, there's a lot of unknown people here. Chris Hitchin, who's Ricky in the lead, is excellent. You mentioned Maloney, who's the nasty bastard boss, who is actually, he's really good in that role.
Yeah,
first time actor.
Yeah, excellent. And so do go and check that one out. That is going to be in, well, that's in cinemas. And there's a few Ken Loach films up on Cousin Home Cinema.
Yeah, you
as
can
well.
Check out some of his old back catalogue on Cousin Home Cinema if you search for Ken Loach. And you can also check out films from the past few weeks that are still in cinemas. So By the Grace of God, which we reviewed last week and spoke to the film's director, Francois Ozon, incredible film, and Olivier Assayas's Nonfiction.
Yeah. So do go and check those out, as well as we mentioned, Doctor Sleep and Sorry We Missed You, which are in cinemas now. And if you've got any thoughts on those films, you can let us know about them by tweeting at Curzon Cinemas. We're all there individually as well. I'm on Twitter as Jake H. Cunningham. Kelly, you are there as?
KS underscore Powell.
Sam Howler underscore one.
Ella underscore Kemp.
And if it's your first time listening to the show, you can subscribe. You can do that on iTunes, Acast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And whilst you're there, if you could leave us a review or a comment, that'd be absolutely wonderful. But until then, we did a little roundup last time, didn't we? So we'll do that again, shall we? All right. So that's bye from me.
Goodbye.
Bye from Kelly.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Woo! Nice. Well done. That's
really good.
Good.
Yeah.
Appreciate that, Mark. You can put that at the end.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.